The date is June 7th, 1991, and we're watching City Slickers. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Mitch to my Phil.
Hello, everybody. Yeehaw, I guess it's Colin Stewart.
I mean, I took Sad Sack Phil. I took My Life as a Piece of Shit Phil. I gave you Mitch.
All right, well. I mean, I feel like, well, I guess.
You're the real life cowboy.
Yeah.
So it would make sense that you are more of a natural on the trails than I would be.
That's true. Yeah. I'm not curly by any means, but.
No, I'll take Mitch. That's a man. So this week, we're looking back at June 1991 when the movies and theaters were Soap Dish, Hudson Hawk, Thelma and Louise, Backdraft, and of course our movie for today, City Slickers, which earned $179 million on a $27 million budget.
Wow.
Not too fucking shabby. Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of cattle. That's a lot of heady cattle.
Yeah. Well, as always, there will be a stampede of spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, then please pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So this week, I've only got one tagline. I'm a little disappointed, but it's not too bad. This one's a fun one, so here
we
go.
Is it an East-West play?
No, it is not. Okay. No. Yeah, and it's not like a city mouse and country mouse
country situation.
Yeah. Okay, so here we go. Yesterday, they were businessmen. Today, they're cowboys. Tomorrow, they'll be walking funny.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's just it's fun. It's entertaining. I don't know, it hits the points.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't say much, though, so let's go to Colin for a 60-second synopsis.
I should have said something like, all you need is one thing.
Yep, that's right.
All right, thanks to Wikipedia for this. Middle-aged friends Mitch Robbins, Ed Ferrillo, and Phil Berquist use adventure trips as escapism for their boring lives. Mitch hates his radio advertising sales job. Phil is trapped in a loveless marriage to his shrewish wife, Arlene, while managing his father-in-law's supermarket, and Ed is a successful and dashing sporty goods salesman who recently married a significantly younger woman but is unwilling to fully settle down. At Mitch's 39th birthday, Phil and Ed give Mitch a trip for all three to go on a two-week cattle drive from New Mexico to Colorado. Phil's 20-year-old employee Nancy unexpectedly arrives and announces she's pregnant with his baby, causing Arlene to walk out. Mitch's wife Barbara insists that he go on the cattle drive to soul search for a new purpose in life and find his smile. I was wondering, I don't know if anybody's a wrestling fan, but I was kind of wondering if this was pre or post when Shawn Michaels lost his smile. It's 91. I think it's not that had to have been around. That had to be later 90s, like 96. So I think this predates it.
But Shawn Michaels, huge City Slickers fan.
Must have been, yeah.
Must have been. Yeah.
Once in New Mexico, the trio meet a ranch owner named Clay Stone and their fellow cattle drivers. They meet some ranch hands named Jeff and TR, who begin sexually harassing one of their fellow travelers, Bonnie. Trail boss Curly intervenes, though he inadvertently humiliates Mitch. During the drive, Mitch accidentally causes a stampede with his electric coffee maker, which destroys the camp. And while searching for stray cows, Mitch discovers Curly has a kind nature beneath his gruff exterior. Curly encourages Mitch to discover the one thing in his life that is most important to him. Along the way, Mitch helps deliver a calf from a dying cow, which Mitch names the calf Norman. Shortly after, Curly suffers a fatal heart attack, leaving the drive under Jeff and TR's control. The camp cook Cookie gets drunk and inadvertently destroys the food supply, breaking his leg in the process. A few of the other people take Cookie to a nearby town to get medical attention, while the rest of them continue on the drive. Jeff and TR get drunk, threatened to kill Norman. Mitch intervenes, but he's a soft city boy. But unfortunately for him, Phil and Ed intervene, and Phil holds a gun and gets out all his what would we call it, like midlife angst out on
pent up frustrations.
Yeah. So Jeff and TR sleep it off, and then they abandon the entire group. Bonnie and the two Jewish restaurant, what are they, restaurateurs? They
continue on
ice cream guys.
Yeah.
They continue on to Colorado while Ed, Phil, and Mitch remain to finish the drive. They brave a heavy storm as they drive the herd to Colorado. They get all the cows across the river, but somehow nobody thought to like maybe not let this little baby calf go solo in a deep raging river.
Throw that across the back of your horse, maybe like a blanket.
Maybe. You know, hindsight's 20/20, I guess. But Norman nearly drowns. But Mitch acts to save him. Both are swept down the current, but Phil and Ed rescue them. They safely reach the Colorado ranch when Stone offers to reimburse everyone's fees. However, in the process, he also reveals that that he intends to kill all the cattle that they've just driven
to slaughter
Colorado, which deeply upsets the city people, Mitch, Phil, and Ed, and they're sad. They're sad because like at no point do I get... No, I guess we'll talk about it later. The men return to New York City. Mitch, a happier man, reunites with Barbara and their two children. He has also brought Norman home as a pet. Odd choice. Phil, having learned his employee is not pregnant after all, begins a relationship with Bonnie, and Ed intends to start a family with his wife. Mitch is ready to restart his life with a new vision. Roll
there
credits. With a cow.
With a cow. I guess all the different calves that played Norman were sent to like a petting zoo and saved. So
that's nice to know.
Yeah. So there is a happy ending to all the cattle being sold for slaughter at the end of this movie. Oh boy. City Slickers. I remember what a big deal this movie was because the Oscars at the time, this was around the time that Billy Crystal was doing so much hosting of the Oscars. And it was such a huge deal because Jack Palance was nominated for Best Supporting Actor. So, like, you couldn't get away from City Slickers in 1991 because he was doing push-ups on the stage at the Oscars, proving how tough he was as an old man. And Billy Crystal, of course, was hosting, so... I remember when this movie first came out, I absolutely loved it. It was a good movie to watch with my family. I didn't understand it all that well at 13, but, you know, now I definitely get a bit more of it. But I always thought it was a sweet movie. So this is one of those movies that I grew up loving. And this and the sequel, City Slickers 2, The Legend of Curly's Gold, are they become pirates? No, they're still cowboys. But Colin, what about you? If I remember correctly, you've never actually ever seen this movie.
No, I've never seen this movie. I think I've seen parts of the second one.
Okay.
It's interesting, though, watching this movie for the first time. As a nostalgia movie, I feel like there's no way that this movie could hit the same now as it did when you would have watched it when you were younger.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We'll get into it more, but I don't know. This movie has like a lot of depth, like way more depth than I thought it was going to have. I thought it was just going to be like a funny, I don't know. I was almost thinking it was going to be like an Adam Sandler type movie.
Yeah.
But
it's got intelligence and an emotional IQ that, you know, rivals something like When Harry Met Sally. Like,
yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's not far. It's. I would say this movie, despite its name, is weirdly in the same vein as When Harry Met Sally. When it comes to like what I would almost call like a, it's like what The Breakfast Club and those movies are for you when you're young. These movies are for you when you're like 35 plus.
Yeah. When you're hitting that age, yeah, at 39 like Billy Crystal was in the movie. Yeah, no, he was like 44 in this movie, but yeah. I just that was the first thing I said to Kingsley after your show too was 39, eh?
Yeah. And not quite.
Well, okay, well, here we go. Let's jump into City Slickers, directed by, I don't know why I put the emphasis on slickers like that. City Slickers. It's, why am I saying it's City Slickers? You know, but anyway, directed by Ron Underwood, produced by Irby Smith, who we just discussed with Young Guns, the fascinating Irby Smith, and Billy Crystal is an executive producer on this, written by Lowell Gans, and this is quite the handle, Babalu Mandel.
Babalu,
yes. And Babalu Mandel is a writer on Splash, League of Their Own, Parenthood, Multiplicity, like big movies. And actually, Lowell Gans has similar credits, so they must work as a team quite often. So, and so we open this movie in Pamplona, Spain, running with the bulls. Would you?
I mean, I'll tell you this, I had the opportunity and I did not, so.
Okay.
I mean, like, I remember being, like, I was in Spain during the running of the bulls one year.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay.
And we, like, knew it was coming up and there were, like, people in our hostel who were thinking about doing it. And I remember me and my buddy, like, thinking about going.
Yeah.
And I was just like, it looks fun, but, like, the bad is too bad. Like,
yeah,
the bad of, like, getting gored is too bad.
Gored or trampled or
trampled,
any of that.
Yeah, like,
does not seem like how I'd want to spend my European vacation, how I'd want to wrap that up. No, not at all. I mean, right now at 45, I mean, I'm sitting here complaining about old man ailments lately where it's like, ah, my knees are shot and my hands are feeling arthritic and all. So right now, I don't think I would, but at my healthiest, fuck no. No, not a chance. I mean, I've gone skydiving, but like running with the bulls, no, fuck you. No, I am not. Yeah. I am not unless my life depends on it. I am not letting myself be chased by this, you know, 1,000-pound animal with giant death spears on its head, you know? It's a death unicorn is what that is.
Yeah, no, I don't think that would be something for me.
It's so weird with these three particular men because, you know, like Bruno Kirby, I know him from When Harry Met Sally. And I mean, of course, we know Daniel Stern from Home Alone. It's weird thinking of them as thrill seekers. And like, especially with Bruno Kirby, he's the one that is most into this thrill seeking shit. And he seems like he would be the least into it.
Yeah, none of these guys scream to me like adventurous, thrill-seeking, adrenaline junkies.
It's like us talking about Emilio Estevez always being the jock. Yeah, it does not make sense for these three men. Like, you know, like Phil jumping up on the pole to get out of the way. It's like, okay. Yeah, that's Daniel Stern being Marv from Home Alone. You know, something wacky. He's up and out of the way. You know, and Ed diving off to the side. But, like, the fact that it's Billy Crystal that keeps going, it's like, he does not strike me as a majorly athletic guy. But, I mean, he's a former New York Yankees. Billy Crystal has actually played one day for the New York Yankees.
Oh, yeah. I will say that I was kind of impressed, I think, by the horse riding ability. Like, there were some scenes where I could tell it wasn't them. But there were a lot of scenes where I could tell it was them.
Yeah.
Or at least it really looked like it was them. I don't know if it was. But
I did read in trivia that like the majority of the stunts were done by them in this movie.
Yeah. So, and like, you know, they're doing some pretty difficult horse riding. I thought that was impressive.
I've never ridden a horse up to its own midsection through a river.
No.
You know, like that's... Yeah, that even that right there is impressive in itself, I would say.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, we're talking about these three guys running from the bulls, so let's continue running down this list. Or let's look at this cast list a little bit closer. To get it out of the way right now, Robin Williams was someone that was a possibility for any three of the characters I read.
Really?
Yeah. And I guess Rick Moranis was a possibility for Phil, but that's when his wife got sick and he retired from acting.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, we have, so we touched Billy Crystal, Daniel Stern, Bruno Kirby, Got Patricia Wedig as Barbara Robbins. Helen Slater as Bonnie Rayburn.
Supergirl.
Supergirl.
Supergirl Helen Slater as Bonnie Rayburn. Yeah.
Jack Palance as Curly Washburn.
This is one where they had a couple other alternate castings as well. Clint Eastwood and Charles Bronson. But Charles Bronson didn't like the fact that his character would have died. So he's like, well, I'm not doing that movie. And Harvey Keitel auditioned for Curly, apparently. But yeah, he did win Best Supporting Actor for this role.
That's wild.
This is an Academy Award winning movie. Like, not only is it not just your run-of-the-mill goofy comedy, it's an Academy Award winning comedy.
Oh, that's cool.
Noble Willingham is Clay Stone. Tracy Walter is Cookie. Jeffrey Tambor. Is he still canceled?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
He plays Lou.
Yeah.
Josh Mostel is Barry Shalowitz. David Paymer is Ira Shalowitz. Bill Henderson.
Who we saw on this show with Crazy People, David Paymer. I just throwing that out there. A little connective tissue for I used to like this one.
Bill Henderson is Dr. Ben Jessup. Bill Lewis is Dr. Steve Jessup. Kyle Secor is Jeff. Dean Hallow is TR. Carla Tamborelli is Arlene Burquist. Yeardley Smith is Nancy.
Lisa Simpson is Nancy. And you know what? Let's just skip down to the one that blew my fucking mind. Because, like, okay, we've got a bunch of other names. Lindsay Crystal, actually, as Holly Robbins, is Billy Crystal's actual daughter. But the one that blew my fucking mind, Jake Gyllenhaal making his debut as Danny Robbins.
Yeah, little doe-faced Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, he still looks like he's been getting a full night's sleep. He doesn't look sleepy yet. Yeah. I got to that point and I paused it. I'm like, holy shit. Like, is that Jake Gyllenhaal? What the fuck is going on here? I had no idea. And I had just watched Roadhouse the day before.
It's a stark contrast.
Very, very stark contrast. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a good rundown of everyone that's in this. I mean, there we go. Yeah. I mean, really, it comes down to, like, four major people in this movie, and one of them dies pretty quickly. I guess Jack Palance only did, like, 2 weeks of filming. He was in and out pretty quick.
Well, most of his filming is just him being filmed off in the distance.
Yeah. After the bowl thing, we do get those really fun animated credits. So this being your first time watching this movie, I know you're a big fan of animated credits as well. So what did you think of City Slickers offerings when it came to opening this movie?
I thought it was good. Like, it was funny. I enjoyed it. I always love going back to these like 90s comedies just to see what the intro is going to be, because they've never... We don't do that anymore.
No.
For, like, anything. Like, everything always just starts.
Yeah. Or you're spending so much time showing the production company's cards in front of the movies that they don't want to give you long credits after that, because you've already sat through 10 minutes of, like, a Skydancer production and all this sort of shit. But yeah, so after our opening credits with our animated cowboy, we see that Mitch is getting stitches from his bull injury. He got gored by a bull. He's got an extra pooper now. And Phil is taking pictures of the memories. Gotta make sure that we have memories of this. And we get onto the plane. They're going home, and we find out that Phil's wife is the worst. He pretends to fall asleep. I love that trick. I love the falling asleep almost immediately, just so that you don't have to talk to this woman you hate.
Yeah, sad. It's a sad state.
Yeah.
Maybe hits too close to home.
But very quickly, it's easy to find out who these characters are. I mean, it's like, okay, Ed's the player, and yeah. Phil's the sad sack. You know, we've got our Cameron Fry. We've got our...
You know? It was surprising to me. Like, the characters are, like, so simple, but also, like, so well-established. But then they also, like, peel the layers back slowly. Like I wouldn't have thought, for how simple they seem at the beginning of the movie, that there would, like I said before, like, that there would be so much depth to uncover as the movie progresses.
Yeah, when they get to their discussion of their best day.
Yeah, that scene,
like,
is
Ed
unreal.
Ed comes fucking alive, right? Like, it's like, where's this guy been the entire movie? Yeah. Like, suddenly Ed becomes a real person in that movie, yeah. But, I mean, in this opening, he's dating someone that's half his age, and he just wants to go on more and more dangerous adventures. And ultimately, Mitch is just depressed, and we've got, like, 1 year later, and, like, the movie, kind of like, you know, when we did Sleepless in Seattle, it just punches you in the heart right off the bat, because, like, Mitch is depressed. Yeah. Mitch is just moping and walking around. He is not a happy man. You know, his job that he's been doing for years, he's now being babysat at, and, you know, like, it's just... But it really dives into the struggles that he's going through and really explores in a very intelligent way these characters. Like, I'm having loved this movie when I was 13 and now watching it at 45, where it's like, I kind of feel you, Mitch. Like,
yeah,
I know what you're going through, buddy. I've been there. Like,
that's what I was thinking when you were mentioning. Like, I just don't think if I watched this when I was 13, I would appreciate anything about what Mitch is going through. Whereas, like, watching it at my current age, I'm like, I've seen people like that. I've been like that. Like, I know what that feels like. Like, it really, really, they nailed whatever that, like, 40-year-old midlife crisis angst type thing is to a T.
Yeah, like, have you seen that mental health video where it's the two soccer fans at the stadium?
No.
And it just shows them over the years, and it's like the one guy keeps, you know, hey, are you okay? You know, how's everything going with you? Oh, you know, not bad. And, like, but you see him getting sadder and sadder and sadder. And then, like, at the end, twist, it's the guy that was super happy the whole time. All of a sudden, his seat is empty, right? And then it's, like, mental health effect, you know. Always make sure you ask. But it was, like, the guy was never asking back, how are you? Right? So it's just, it's, like, this video that has been kind of making the rounds where it's, like, oh, my God. That's an amazing video. And it's the same sort of thing here as we're exploring Mitch and his depression and everything that's going on with him, where it's, like, I was not expecting that from this movie because I remember the cows. Remember the, you know, all
Curly.
That sort of stuff. Curly, yeah.
The drunk wagon driver.
Yeah, yeah. But we get to 1 year later. It's Mitch's birthday, and he gets the phone call from his mom in the morning. I guess this is an actual thing that happens to Billy Crystal, is his mom would always phone him on his birthday at the time of his birth. Yeah.
I mean, that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite the annual tradition. I mean, you know, like, I wasn't good at starting any annual traditions with my kids. You know, you see all those parents out there that they have the four, and, you know, I'm talking to you with your 3-year-old daughter right now, right? So, you know, like, the parents that have the foresight to have a sign that they're going to use every year on the first day of school and, like, have a plan right from kindergarten that we're going to do a first day and a last day picture, and this is the board we're going to hold up, because I did not have that forethought at all. And so, I mean, I look at this guy that obviously has been getting woken up by this woman since his first birthday to be told this story of his birth. You know that it's been going on for 39 years.
Yeah. I'm sure. I don't know. I mean, that would be one of those things where I guess it would probably reach at some points, like, annoying, but you'd definitely miss it when it was gone.
Yeah. Yeah, 100% you would. I have in my notes, we once again have Jeffrey Tambor, and I'm beginning to think, remember when we were discussing who's the actor that's been on this show the most? I'm beginning to think it might be Jeffrey Tambor. Because we have asked, has he been canceled several times on this show? We don't know where he's sitting.
Yeah, it's funny too, because it's always in, like, we're, like, hitting him before he, like, was famous. Like, we're hitting him in his, like, character actor season of life.
Well, I have to laugh because one of my sad obsessions is game shows, right? I will sit there and just crush hours of game shows in the background. And Hollywood Squares, I've been watching some old Hollywood Squares, and Jeffrey Tambor was the announcer for Hollywood Squares. And every once in a while, he would be one of the squares in the Hollywood Squares. So, but it was, this is Jeffrey Tambor, the voice of Hollywood Squares. And this would have been around the time that he was doing Arrested Development. So it's like he was kind of starting to get famous or more famous. But yeah, like he's in a lot of these old movies we've come across. Who knew he was way more famous than I ever thought he was?
There you go.
So we go to our career day, and that's where I had my holy shit, that's Jake Gyllenhaal moment. I actually paused the movie at that moment to go look up the cast list because I wanted to see if I was right.
I mean, he's like, he's unmistakable.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I mean, it's either that or a young Tobey Maguire, right? Like it could be one of the two at that age. It's interchangeable, I think. But yeah, we go to the career day with where the construction worker is telling like an insane and offensive story, swearing in front of all the kids. Ugh. But yeah, and then Mitch gets up there and just continues his meltdown and, you know, his depression.
I mean, in that situation, because it's kind of like his own son like lies about his job or tries to lie about his job while he's standing there.
Yeah.
I mean, that would make me feel pretty shitty too. So I mean, I get it.
True, yeah. It's what do you do? I mean, and it's sad because like his depression and his speech made me realize what we are as consumers these days. Because like he's talking about how he's just selling airtime.
Yeah.
Like he's selling the concept of something that exists, right? Like he's just selling time. And I sit there and think, do you realize how many fucking like gigabytes of electronics I own? Right? Like it's just, you know, like the fact that I'm paying for more storage space for the fucking cloud.
Yeah.
You know, like shit like that where it's just like I pay for all these things that I don't actually own.
That's like,
and so it's,
yeah, I was thinking about that with iTunes, like back in the day, like I bought so much music on iTunes, and then Apple just decided to get rid of iTunes and go to Apple Music. And sure, all my music is there, but it's like I have to pay for a subscription to listen to my own music, basically.
Yeah.
Like it's such a weird thing.
And so once again, I feel you, Mitch. Like, yeah. I understand, like, because that's where I am these days. Everything is so fucking expensive, and I'm paying for, I don't know, airwaves. I'm paying for cloud. I'm, you know, like, it just, yeah.
Paying for shit you don't even need. That's what I was thinking about streaming services. Like, you're literally just paying for access. This is how I would describe Netflix, the way that I use it right now, is I'm paying $14 or like $20 a month, I think it is now, for a service that just allows me to scroll through movies until I get too overwhelmed. I don't even know what to watch and turn it off.
I sit there and scroll for an hour just to like sit down and watch a couple episodes of Brooklyn Nine-Nine or something, you know, like
at the end of the day I know every time I go to Netflix that I'm gonna end up watching The Office or Seinfeld, but I still spend an hour cycling through everything else just to make sure that's actually what I want to watch.
I add shit to my list. You know, I keep beefing up that list of mine, but I don't go and then sit down and watch any of them. That's the problem. I go and watch Is It Cake Again? You know? But anyway, City Slickers. So I completely forgot about all those opening stuff. I have to say that. Like, everything up until the point when they get to the ranch was just a blur to me from my childhood that I got a lot more out of it this time, where I'm just like, holy shit, there's a lot going on here. At the party when Phil is once again pretending to be asleep, but that's when Lisa Simpson shows up and ruins everybody's night.
Yeah, I wish I had known that's who it was. before I watched it, so I could pay attention to the voice.
It's funnier when you know that.
Yeah, in my mind, I'm like, in my mind, I remember thinking like her voice sounded familiar, but she's kind of like a, I don't mean this to be offensive, but she's kind of like a weird looking person, like not what I.
She's rather. I would say she's plain. Like, she's just...
Yeah,
she's
like,
a plain
she's,
nor-
she's normal looking.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, she's not unattractive, but yeah, she does... It's not necessarily what you would expect the voice of Lisa Simpson to be. But, I mean, she, of course, also holds the distinction of being the only actor on that show that plays one part. Like, everyone else, you know, has all these multiple jobs. She is only Lisa Simpson.
Yeah.
And that's fucking mind blowing. Imagine that job security. And yeah. It's her voice.
It also made me think this is like the curse of the 90s. Like, only in the 90s would you show up to somebody's house to announce this. Mm-hmm. Like, nowadays, this would just be a text message.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, she blows up his spot. Everything goes crazy. Yeah, she's late.
Also, but that was the thing is. I was a bit confused later on when we find out that she wasn't pregnant, because you work at a, like, were pregnancy tests not, like, readily available then? Like, I'm just thinking, like, why? It seemed to me like if she's making that big of a scene, like, if she needed to show up at somebody's house right then and there, there was some kind of confirmation that she was pregnant, but then...
Yeah.
But then later on, it doesn't seem like there was. So.
I think it's just the panic of a 20-year-old is what we're dealing with. I mean, we find out
I
that
guess,
she's
yeah.
20, right? And so being a few days late when it's like you're sleeping with this married guy and that's the only person you are sleeping with. Yeah, I that might be enough of a freak out. I'd say in 1991, there would have been the tests, but it wouldn't have been the automatic go-to that it would be now, right? Like, it might not be your first thought. You know, you remember when flip phones existed and it took you a long time to remember, oh, shit, I have a camera right here,
yeah.
Right? Nowadays, it's like, I take a fucking picture of everything to remind myself. It's like, you know, yeah. I want to remember what I'm going to order once I get to the front, you know, like, I'll take a picture of it so I can read it off my phone, you know,
yeah.
But... Yeah, back in the day, it's like I forgot that I always had a phone in my pocket or a camera in my pocket for like 3 years straight. So it could be the same sort of thing. You work in the grocery store, but you don't automatically think of the grocery or of the pregnancy test. I'll go confront him first. I'll go fuck his night up. That's what I'll do instead.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of Phil's arc, it seemed like it was a necessary thing to happen. Arlene kind of seems like a bitch.
Yeah, she really sucks, yeah. And like, and he is just absolutely owned by that family with the fact that, like, her father is the one that owns the grocery store that he works at. Like, he's... he is so entwined in Arlene's life that I kind of worry about what's going to happen with Phil in the end. Like...
That also seems to me like a big, like 90s trope. Like, there was always the guy,
yeah.
There's always the guy who, like, he was like the first to settle down and he ended up like either taking over his family business or work or his like his new wife's family hooked him up at the job. Like,
yeah.
isn't that what TS's situation is in Mallrats?
Something like that, yeah, or someone gets him a job, because there's a lot of that as well, where it's like, you know, someone is hooking them up with the summer internship or, you know, yeah, there's a lot of job getting in the early 90s. And
it just teaches you that, like, you never want to be the type of man who has to rely on his wife's family.
That's
for,
right.
For his income.
You want to be self-reliant, make sure you know how to do some housework, yeah, learn some skills. So after all the craziness, though, yeah, Mitch just wants, or his Mitch's wife just wants him to go find his smile. He's not going to come to Florida with her because he'll just be miserable down in Florida with her family. Go find your smile. And if he can't, we'll jump off that bridge when we come to it. That was a good line.
Yeah.
I mean, a little dark considering how deeply depressed he is, but...
I was trying to get a sense of, like, where they're at. Like, that scene kind of made it seem like if he couldn't figure it out, like, they were headed towards divorce.
Sort of. It felt a little ultimatum-y. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I wasn't a big fan of.
No, not really, yeah. Or electroshock therapy, is that the next step? Or something like that, you know? Well, we'll commit ya. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going dude ranching, though. We're going to go drive some cattle in New Mexico. And, I mean, it definitely seems a lot less thrill-seeking compared to some of the adventures that they show us on the plane home from Spain, right? Mm-hmm. He wanted to wingsuit or on the plane, you know, and it's like, we're going to drive some cattle. But, I mean, I guess it does look intense. It doesn't seem like it's the same sort of thrill-seeking.
No. It also just doesn't seem at all appealing to me. Like, that, like... If I am Mitch in this movie, the movie is basically like me on the lam and them trying to like find me to take me to the dude ranch because I not want to go.
Yeah, I mean, I'm already not much of a camper. The idea of having to be responsible for a herd of cattle and, you know, all of my traveling is by horse and No hobo fantasy camp for me. I'm good without that. It's yeah.
It's also an odd like business that this clay stone guy is running.
Yeah.
Like he's got two or three hired hands and then basically like has somehow like come up with a business model to get people to pay him to move his cattle across state lines, it seems.
Yeah. But the way it is described at the end when they find out that they're being sold for slaughter is that these cattle are supposed to be driven back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they are. They're just play cattle.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I almost guarantee that this actually exists out there. There's got to be.
Do you think? I would be shocked. Well, I mean, I guess I would be shocked that it would exist. I would be kind of shocked that. Well, I would be shocked that it exists just because I can't imagine anybody, like, actually wanting to do this as a vacation.
I don't know.
And I also just think, like, the liability. Like, look at all, like the amount of waivers and, like, legalities that you'd have to go through to get something like this off the ground, I think would be...
Yeah, like, setting aside the scumbag, alcoholic, trail masters that we have in this movie, even if everybody was, like, completely on board and upstanding, you're right, it is still a lot of waivers that would have to be signed. You'd be signing away a lot. There's live ammunition out there. There's the possibility of being trampled. I mean, when the running of the bulls happens, like, did you look into it at all? Like, were you even curious enough to look into it? Do you have to sign away anything with that?
No, from what I remember, you just show up.
You just show up.
There's like a place. There's like a place to start. So you just like grab a train and show up in Pamplona and just find a place to go. Like there's no. It's just like a public. It's like a
free for all.
It's like a public event. Yeah.
Okay.
But the other thing I think with the dude ranch though is also in the movie, they get I think what amounts to maybe a day, maybe 2 days of training.
I was gonna say two.
And like the idea that these quote unquote city slickers who've never had any experience riding a horse are gonna be able to handle a horse well enough to drive cattle after 2 days is
it's definitely a question I had like once we get to the end when most of the party disappears. And it's just left to the three guys in the squad to drive this herd, where I'm thinking, is three guys enough to drive a herd?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what you would actually... Could one guy that's really good drive a herd? Could Curly have driven this herd by himself? Like, it just... It makes me wonder how necessary everyone is there.
Mm-hmm.
So... Like, it is possible that Curly and the two guys, that's enough to drive the herd. Everyone else is just frosting.
Yeah, I think you kind of need at least two. Because you need someone to, like...
Pick up stragglers.
To kind of stay at the back. And then you need someone, like, who can, like, run the sides to, like, maintain a formation and make sure that they don't go off, like
Yeah.
keep a path. But I don't know. It's just that I think to me in this movie is the biggest.
Leap of logic.
Yeah, where you kind of just have to like say to yourself in your mind, like, this is what needed to happen so that we could watch this story unfold. Like, this is the part that like we can't demand too much sense here.
Yeah. Well, I even love the fact that everybody is introduced like just in sequence. Like just everyone happens to show up at the same time to this ranch.
It's
You
like
know, like
Gilligan's Island.
yeah, they were told 8 a.m. and by gum, they are all gonna show up at 8 a.m. Like that's what I find funny is it's wow, these people are very conveniently staggered for introductions here. But we meet the father-son dentist, and of course the son seems to are they father-son? I have to assume they're father-son, right?
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Yeah, and the son though has a chip on his shoulder because he takes everything to race. But yeah, they're from Baltimore, and then we get Ira and Barry, who are the founders of Ira and Barry's ice cream, which of course is not a real ice cream brand, but you know, like a stand-in for Ben and Jerry's. That's basically what it is. I like their line of but we've seen the commercials for those guys. Well, yeah, come on. If it was us, would you be able to eat ice cream afterwards? So I like the self-deprecating humor. I'm always there for it. But I mean, while I'm talking about Ira and Barry, I might as well just go to sponsorship corner. Going on a fake one today. Always on the lookout for product placements and movies, this week's City Slickers is brought to you by Nike Shoes, TDK Cassettes, Ocean Spray Cranberry Juice, Planters Peanuts, Cape Cod Potato Chips, Sony Cameras, Goodyear Tires, Marlboro Cigarettes, Red Man Chewing Tobacco, which I'm sure doesn't have a racist mascot at all on it. Visa, Evian Water, and the New York Mets, which is interesting. It's although he's a big Yankees fan, Billy Crystal wore the Mets hat in this movie because of a generous donation the Mets made to Comic Relief. He's like, okay, that's your prize, is I will, instead of a Yankees hat, I will wear a Mets hat in this movie.
Oh, wow.
Plus the fictional Fresh and Fine Foods, Tarillo's Sporting Goods, and Stone Cattle Ranch. Actually, Tarillo's Sporting Goods, that brings up a very good point, is just with what you were saying about 90s movies, yeah, Ed works in the family sporting goods shop.
Oh, right, yeah.
So,
I
yeah,
got what you're
so.
saying. It's all
And,
nepotism. That's what I'm saying. That's why that Jessup kid is so angry.
That's right.
But even he, I'm sure he just got a job because of his dad.
That's right. Yeah. And of course, Stone Cattle Ranch. And I mean, I'll mention Ira and Barry's ice cream, even though they're only ever name drop, but and this has been Sponsorship Corner. So after we meet Ira and Barry, we meet the lady. Supergirl walks up alone. Bonnie. I like everyone's reaction with the. She's like, I have a friend that was supposed to meet me, but she called me. I should go. No. Of course, all the guys want the only girl to stay. It's 1991. But look at that. A girl can be a dude rancher too.
It is like it's not like nothing against her, but it is funny that in like 1991 they're like, okay, so we got Billy Crystal, we got our other two guys, so we got our three male leads, and well, we need a hot chick, like we need a hot chick, like we just need one, like just we just need one hot girl in here, like,
Yeah.
and then we'll just and she'll end up with one of them. We'll figure it out on the way.
Oh, and don't forget some black cowboys. We gotta get some black guys in there too. So,
Yeah.
but we can't. We, not a black lady. That's going too far. We need a white lady and two black guys. That's what we need. Yeah,
It's
like.
just sad. Like when I see roles like this one for Helen Slater, I'm like the least that you could do is give this character some like depth. Like, give her some, like, edge. Like,
she gets the sexual harassment scene. That's what she gets.
Like, you literally just know from, like, the moment she steps on screen, like, she's going to end up with Phil. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, and I don't know, that, yeah, that'd be my a critique of the film.
And it's also one of those things, well, you want to put in a woman, why did her friend have to bail on her at the last, why couldn't you have had a pair of gals?
Yeah.
Because you don't want to take away from the three guys. Yeah.
And why couldn't, like, you have Ed's, like, whole thing about, like, not wanting to settle down, blah, blah, blah. It's from, like, having two female characters kind of, like, you know, let's get the other side. Let's get the other side, the perspective of, like, a woman on his, like, mm-hmm. little situation. Why he's, you know, like give them something to, like, do in these guys. Like, even Phil, like, give them something to do to, like, again, peel the onion back in their story arcs and that kind of stuff. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, help the other characters grow in other ways as well. Yeah. And I mean, Ed at the end of the movie, he does say, oh, well, I'm going to go home and get her pregnant. Like, he's suddenly got this new vision on life and, you know, the joy of and everything like that. But yeah, there was no one to impart that wisdom on him. He just kind of came to it on his own. And I guess that's okay. But
yeah, I guess I never thought about this till now. But a critique I would have of this movie is that it has a really interesting ensemble that it never really takes full advantage of.
No, I suppose not. No, because the characters that they introduce some very fun characters between the dentists and the ice cream guys and the lady. Like, they do have these very interesting characters, but yeah, they are underused for a lot of it.
Yeah.
I'd even like to see more, like, just interactions where they're paired up differently every once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, have Ira paired up with Phil or something like that and see what happens. So we meet the head of the Stone Ranch, the food's like the cook, food's brown, hot, and there's plenty of it.
Yep.
You came out here, City Slickers, you're going home, cowboys. And so we get our cowboy montage, our cowboy up montage. The one thing that Mitch can't do is rope cattle, though. How hard is it? Like, I know you've done, like, you know, you have your steer or whatever, your mutton busting days. How hard is throwing a lasso?
I mean, it's always hard to hit a moving target. It's not that hard to hit a stationary target.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because, like that type of rope, it's, like, made for lassoing. So, like, yeah. it's not as flimsy. So,
no,
like,
it's stiff. It holds the loop.
Yeah, so if you can get a good loop going, it's just, like, you just gotta get it's just the wrist. You gotta get that toss. But yeah, like, they hit a stationary object. Like, it's not, I remember even when I was a kid, like just standing with shitty rope and just, like, trying to lasso stumps, and you could get, like, pretty good at it.
Yeah. Well, I'm just wondering with the whole, even if it is only one day of cowboying montage that we get, you know, 1 or 2 days, he should be able to rope a stationary cow by now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, like, okay. To do what he does at the end where you're moving, it's raining, and you're, like, about to throw, like, a long shot rope into a river, that's pretty tough.
That's expert level, yeah.
Yeah, that's, like, god mode level probably, but
yeah. And then at the end of the day, they're all icing their nuts. That was also pretty great. And then, like, we get the confrontation of the in the corral with, what was her name again? Barbara? Bonnie.
Bonnie.
Bonnie. Yeah, we get our confrontation in the corral with the two bad guys, and Mitch goes in to stand up for her, but then Curly comes to the rescue, so we get our introduction of Curly with, I think you owe the lady an apology. That's got to be some sort of HR violation right there, you know? Like, sure, what they were doing was wrong to begin with. I don't want to, you know, undermine that fact, but
threatening a man with a knife.
After throwing a rope around his neck, yeah, it's that just seems excessive. That seems like, I don't blame them for quitting at some point.
Yeah, something tells me this dude ranch doesn't have an HR, so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Did you see how leathery he is? He's like a saddlebag with eyes. So, apparently, fun fact, Jack Palance is allergic to horses.
What?
So he required a shot every day, like allergy medication each day before filming with horses. Yeah.
It's funny.
Which was like half his days he's on a horse.
Yeah.
So yeah, so they've had 2 days of training, I guess, and so it's finally time to start the actual cattle drive. And so they're out of there with a bunch of yeehaws, and then we get like a cattle drive montage. Like, that's the thing, is this movie is a lot of montages with like then a very sentimental moment.
Yeah.
And then more montage, you know.
Yeah, it's like montage, problem resolution, montage, problem resolution.
Yeah. You know, and we see them like out there doing their thing, you know, they Mitch is proud because he herds a cow back into the herd and then moonwalks the horse back into its parking spot. That's some impressive horse work right there. And that's one where I think that is actually him on that horse. So I have to assume it's just a really well-trained horse.
Yeah, I would
and
think so.
He's not actually doing that much.
Yeah.
Someone with a carrot out of frame.
Yeah. Is there any, like, if you had three friends or two friends, I guess, approach you to say, like, let's go on some kind of, like, weird vacation like this to experience a historical, I don't know, way of life, is there one that you would be into?
I mostly just think about the places that I still want to visit.
Yeah.
You know, so... Like, I can't think of anything major, but, like, it would be, I'd want to tour something specific with, you know, a specific person. I can't even think of what that would be right now, but, like...
It could go be, like I'm palace guard at the fucking palace. go live like an old knight.
Yeah.
Well, I know what yours would be.
There we go. Renaissance fantasy camp, yeah.
Yeah, like, what if you had, like, two-week-long, like, semester at Hogwarts, where you could go be, like, legit be in Hogwarts, and they had people dressed up as all the teachers and stuff. That'd be sweet.
Yeah, I'd be nerdy enough that I'd be into that. Yeah.
I wonder how far off we are from those types of things. Like, just, like, completely immersive, like, vacation things. Like Disney, I guess, is close.
Well, like, you've seen the new floor thing that they have, the motion floor or whatever it is. I don't even remember what they call it, but it's this floor that you can walk on and you don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
They're at this point where they can film on a soundstage that is itty bitty because someone can be running in place on this thing, right? Like, that's the holodeck on Star Trek. I mean, you know, as soon as you can interact with something else there.
Yeah.
I don't know. It blows my mind that, like, we do live in the future.
Yeah. The Jetsons future, yeah.
Like, we're not far off from some of that shit. Like, I've got a device in my pocket that I can look at anybody at any time if they have the same device in their pocket. Sure, we don't have it coming up on, you know, goggles on our screen. Or, well, the goggles that do exist are so stupid looking that they're not cool like the ones that you see in most sci-fi. But anyway, way off topic from...
My bad.
I don't think horse driving would be the one that I choose. That I will go with that. I mean, I think I would rather do like some sort of Indiana Jones, Amazon, Inca Temple type excursion or something. Or, you know, like I'd do like an Italy Da Vinci Code tour or something. That would be fun. But yeah, no, not horse riding, not cattle drives for me. I don't know why I have this in my notes, but hey pal, I can get an erection anytime I want, watch. Just random note. Yeah,
that's like when Mitch and Ed are talking about like how Ed's feeling like he doesn't want to commit or whatever, and he's feel like he's struggling with the idea of being with the same woman all the time and all that.
Yeah.
But it's like a really long drawn, I can't remember it fully, but I remember it's like a really long drawn out. He's like, he uses some kind of like analogy of maybe it's ice cream or maybe like going to the grocery store or something like that. But
yeah. Well, and then Ed ends up getting really offended by the idea of Phil giving him, like, advice on being monogamous because of his affair. And it's like, yeah, but if I hadn't had sex in 12 years, which is something that comes out at the party, like, it's... I don't know. Like, it's just one of those things where he was not in that marriage for 11 of those 12 years. I mean, it's... At some point, you know... Yeah, he's going to go bang the checkout girl. I don't know. But yeah, anyway. So yeah, next morning...
He put up the good fight.
That's right.
For as long as he could.
He did. He tried. But I mean, God, she was terrible. But anyway, the next morning, yeah, we get a big old stampede because Mitch decides to make fresh coffee with his battery-operated coffee grinder. But now, Curly stops them all with one gunshot. Would one gunshot just stop a bunch of cows?
No, I thought that was weird also. I felt like the gunshot would create more chaos than just stop. Like I think
because it's Curly, the cows were like, whoa, fuck, we don't want to fuck with Curly.
Like, I think what they're going for would work for humans, but I think that would be more startling to cows.
Yeah, they would just take off back the other way, right? Yeah. But so Mitch has to go off with Curly to round up a couple of the strays. So this is where we get Mitch breaking off from the rest of the group. And it becomes a story about just the two of them because they end up having to like camp for the night. And we get the little harmonica sing-along, which I guess was like Jack Palance's last day of filming was the harmonica sing-along.
Oh, nice.
But like he managed to open them up. He's finally got Curly talking. And this is where we get the big moment, the thing that, you know, like, if you know anything about City Slickers, you know about the one thing. So that's where we find out about the one thing. How long did it take? Like, did you figure it out in that moment, or did you need the explanation later on from Billy Crystal to figure out what Curly was getting at with the one thing?
No, I figured it out with the explanation to Billy Crystal, but I also just thought it was kind of a weak motivational speech.
Yeah, it's like the idea that in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the secret to life, the universe, and everything is 43. You know, like that's. So the calf birthing scene, that's the next thing that we get. I guess they had three birthing cows were on hand just in case retakes were needed. So they actually just kind of lined up cows. There were six Normans in total. And Billy Crystal actually assisted in the delivery.
Wait, so that was like a legit birth?
That was a legit birth. Some of the close-ups of the calf, like all covered in slime, it is a puppet calf. But because they wanted like extra takes and stuff. But the shot of Norman getting to his feet was real footage taken just after the birth. And yeah, Billy helped get that cow out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, something else to add to his resume. He was a Yankee for one day. He's a veterinarian. But yeah, and so they all live on a farm and they're in a petting zoo farm. Huh. I also have here in my notes, I didn't even read this one before I copied it in here, but it says the shots featuring Crystal were filmed in Colorado, but the shots from the same scene featuring Jack Palance were filmed in New York.
What?
So Jack Palance's reactions, they just picked them up in New York, I guess? Weird.
They're just a cowboy in the middle of Central Park with a sharp, sharp upward angle.
Yeah. Yeah, look what I did. I made a cow. Yeah, and then Curly has to shoot the mom because she was suffering. But Mitch finally gets called a cowboy.
I thought that scene, I don't know why, I laughed out loud at that scene because I was just like, the idea that he just like murked this cow. He was suffering. Like, and then he's like, Billy Crystal is just like, why would you do that? And then after he gets the explanation, he's just like, oh.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's cool.
But like, having grown up on a farm, one thing I'll say that is very accurate about this movie that I find with city people is like, is this weird, don't hurt the animals, like, obsession. Where it's like even the stuff at the end when they find out that they're go all these cows are going to slaughter. Like, yeah, that's what happens to cows. They're all good. Like, that's what happens.
Yeah,
that's
well,
how that's how it
like
works.
Like he said, like, yeah, like the where, guy where do you think said, your meat comes from?
Like, it yeah. was weird because I felt like the movie was telling me, like, oh, this guy's evil. Like, this guy, like, we should think he's evil. But I'm like, that's, like, the circle of life. Like, mm-hmm. all these guys eat steak. Like, you can't be mad that the cows get killed.
Yeah.
They played that very true, where I was like, you can the disconnect between, like, what you see in a grocery store and how it gets there was very yeah. present in this movie.
Oh, very much, yeah. And later on, they're sitting around where we have Barry and Ira talking about what the best flavor of ice cream to go with any meal is. How do they know if he's right?
Yeah, I didn't understand that. And they ask, and the explanation is just like, look at us. Like, look who we are. Like, yeah. But I was like, I don't know. Rum raisin, to me, I don't know that that goes well with anything. Like, what if I just what if I just don't like rum raisin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, it's just, you know, earlier you were saying how you wanted more character development, and it's like, and that's what they give us with the side characters is, oh, he can pick out the best ice cream flavor to go with anything. Really? Okay. Yeah.
I think the thing that makes that scene weird is that there's no level of, like, recognition of him being right.
Yeah.
On Billy Crystal's face.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it would have been something if he had given his meal, and then he, like, registered as he thought about the ice cream, but they don't even do that.
Yeah, no. No, they just go on and start talking about, like, their terrible relationships that they've had, and baseball, and then that's when Curly dies. I love the eulogy. Lord, we give you Curly. Try not to piss him off.
I also like that someone thinks to question, like, is it even legal to just bury a body in the middle of, I don't know, private or government land?
Yeah, yeah. But on the other hand, what are you going to do? Take it with you?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the proper refrigeration for that. I mean, it's 6 to 1, half dozen of the other, or whatever is whatever the saying is there, you know, it's which is the worst thing to do? Carry a decaying corpse or bury it on some government land?
Yeah.
You can always come back for the corpse.
is that the premise of the second one? I don't even know what it is, but do they have to go find Curly's body?
I remember that one far less, even though I enjoyed both of them back in the day. I don't remember it as well. Jack Palance is back because he's his twin brother. So
Swirly?
Yeah, I see, and I don't even remember. But yeah, I don't remember the premise of it, except for the fact that they somehow made it so that Jack Palance and Billy Crystal could hang out some more. Yeah, so the best day of your life. We get to the best day of your life. You know, like, they have some big conversations out on the story. And Billy Crystal's best day is actually another true story. So just like the phone call from his parents every birthday. Yeah, the day he went to the Yankees game with his father, and, you know, the autographed program by Mickey Mantle, he actually still has that that program. He showed it on a talk show.
That's cool.
And got Mickey Mantle to sign it again because Mickey Mantle was on the same episode of the talk show. So
that's awesome. It's kind of my initial reaction was to be like, what kind of actor are you? Like, you can't even have, like, you just always just need real stories to make real. But then I was like, but it would be kind of cool to use your real life and have these things, like, on film in these, like, time capsule moments of, like, so that, you know, you could rewatch the film theoretically and remember.
Oh yeah, like, his daughter is in this fucking movie. You know, like, how cool is that even?
Yeah.
Right? You know, like, that there's a time capsule for you to like, just even the idea of being able to work on a production and name a character after one of my friends or one of my family members, you know, like, even that is kind of cool to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, so once Curly dies, everything goes ass up with the other trail guys. They get all drunk and they're threatening to kill Norman and just wanting to embarrass Mitch. Sorry, I skipped over. Sorry, I was talking about the wrong drunk moment. The cook starts driving the wagon drunk, and ends up driving the horse. This is where it gets silly. This is the one really silly moment of the movie, is where Skyrocket and Buttercup come to an end because they go over the cliff. I just like the line of, really, the impact just drove them most of the way into the ground. We just covered them up with dirt.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that we would be burying a trail guide and two horses on this trail. I'm like, oh my God. But that's when Jed and Cookie become a problem.
Yeah.
And they're threatening to kill Norman. And it's like, not Norman. You sons of bitches. Not Norman. While they're busy talking about what to do, like, the drunk cowboys just take off. And so Ed is going to continue driving the herd. So this is where I had the first question, is because it's Ed's idea to, I'm going to continue on. So that's why I was wondering, how many people to drive a herd?
Yeah. You know, I still
two
think...
days of training, he's seasoned. So he's a seasoned take that into account. Yeah.
Well, when you put it like that. Maybe two men or one Ed.
Yeah. You know, even though Mitch is going to go off with everyone else to the town, you know, he ends up coming back. Mitchie the kid to the rescue, which is good because they were terrible at herding. Phil and Ed were terrible by themselves. It's all Mitch. But then, yeah, they actually keep them together. The storm sets in, and so this is where we have the big river crossing scene.
I got an answer for your question.
Oh, okay.
On an average, a single herd of cattle on a long drive, so for example, Texas to Kansas railheads, numbered about 3,000 head, to herd the cattle, a crew of at least 10 cowboys was needed, with 3 horses per cowboy.
Huh. 3 horses per cowboy.
Yeah, so like you would ride, like, you would switch off like which horse you rode that day.
Okay.
But that's like 3,000 head of cattle. I'm going to guess, like, what, there's like 30 cows?
No, it's more than that. I would say this is a couple hundred.
Okay, let's say it's 300.
Because it's got to be worth the slaughtering. That's saving his business, is what he's getting for these butchered cows.
Yeah.
So, yeah, with 300 cows, I mean, you'd need a third of that. So you'd only need 3 guys for 300 cows, right? If the math is math, then for me.
I mean, a third of 3,000 is 1,000. So oh, yeah, you would need... I was thinking you'd need like one guy for 300, maybe.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. True, yes. Okay, so my math ain't mathin', but... Okay, so one guy can do it.
Maybe one guy should do it.
Yeah.
That's what we've
seasoned
come to.
Seasoned Ben Ed. Yeah, okay.
I say, I make fun of you while I'm on my phone trying to pull out my calculator and figure it out. So, like, what do I have to divide by what? Like,
right. If I want percentage, it's the higher number by the lower number. No, it's the lower. I don't remember. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, my mathin' was broken. That's all good. I still don't think you'd want to drive a herd with one, even if that's how the math actually works out. I think 3 is the number for under 1,000 cows.
Yeah, I guess my math was going to say you would like reduce it by a power of 10. So it'd be like 3,000, like 3,000 goes to 300, so then 10 goes to 1.
And this has been Math Corner with Colin and Sean.
Yeah, two idiots who know nothing about math.
Exactly. Yeah, so they manage to keep the cows together. The storm sets in, and this is where we get the river crossing scene. It's fast, but it's not deep. It looks pretty fucking deep once they get into the middle.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess deep would be up over the back of the horse. Is that what we consider deep? Like you said, why isn't someone carrying Norman?
And that was literally my question when they started. I was like, oh, like, where's Norman? When they all got across, I was like, oh, did Norman just, like, what happened to Norman? And then mm-hmm. Sure enough, Norman was in the drink.
Stuck on the other side. Yeah. Yeah, and, I mean, it's also fascinating because watching them cross the river, I never... even realized how much bigger a horse is than a cow. Like, you don't you know, they're both those animals that you see by the side of the road as you drive by at 110 kilometers an hour. You know, like, you don't really think of the size difference. But when you see the fact that the water comes up mid-back, but some of those cows are struggling to keep their head above the water. You know, I just never really thought about how much shorter a cow actually is than a horse.
Yeah, I was curious about that scene because, to be honest, I didn't think that cows could go through that deep of water. Like, yeah. Like that.
Yeah, can but cows swim?
I don't think so.
Yeah. They don't seem like the swimming type, yeah. But then Mitch almost dies trying to save the calf. But, you know, but teamwork makes the dream work, baby, because they managed to rescue Norman and Mitch, and they do it all together.
I like that they give Mitch his big lasso, but then they don't even give him the triumphant moment of saving the cow.
No, it's all about the team. But these cows trusted us. They followed us because we yelled "Yah!" That was also a good moment. Like the fact that, you know, with what you were saying about, you know, the truth of cowboys, you know, Ed gets it. See, Ed's a seasoned vet at this point. They followed us because we yelled "Yah!"
Yeah.
Mitch is still all about these cows trusted us. But yeah, sentimental moment with Norman. I wonder if, like, a cow can be imprinted like that.
I don't know. I mean,
because he comes running to Mitch at the side of the, you know, like, yeah. Like, I know that's just a trained calf, but
I would actually say they can. Like, animals, but I mean, it's like animals are like, they recognize, like, a person who, like, is going to, like, fulfill their, like, base needs. You know what I mean? So it's like, because I even remember I actually had a pet calf when I was a little boy. He wasn't mine, but he lived in my grandparents' spare room, and we called him and we called him Stinky. And I think in a similar fashion, he was either born like too small, so they had to like nurse him back to health, or his mom died or something like that. But anyways, he was living in my grandparents' house. And I would always go and play with him, and he definitely would like come run into me when I saw him. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know I'm 4 years late to the party, but I've been watching Tiger King lately.
Okay.
And I mean, you know, it's the same sort of idea. Like, even those things seem to know him to an extent, right? Like,
yeah.
It's just the idea of nurturing it from the young. Yeah, I just, would a cow be loyal?
Yeah, I think like. But I think the older they get, the more the animal like takes over, for lack of a better word.
No, that's very true. Yeah, I mean, this man lives in New York City. Like, where is he going to keep this fucking cow? He doesn't live in the suburbs. Like, it's just not a well thought through plan.
No,
like 2 days in that apartment. It's you're gonna realize it's the biggest mistake you've ever made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cows shit a lot and they stink.
Yeah. I and then we also get the final sentimental moment where the boys are talking and what they're gonna do when they get home, and Mitch says, I hope I can help. You know, like, Phil's gonna put his life back together. I hope I can help. And then Ed's gonna go get his wife pregnant. I hope I can help. I thought that was a great moment. And then he gets home, he's found his smile, everything's good, and then we find out that he brought a pet home.
Don't forget.
He'll be going to a petting zoo one day, he says. One day.
And don't forget, we get to see Phil getting in a taxi with Bonnie.
That's right. Yeah, so I guess Bonnie must be from New York.
I guess so.
You know, like, we've got the dentist from Baltimore. We've got Ira and Barry that are from, like, Arizona or something like that. And luckily, the one lady on the trip happened to be from New York City. And she's now just moved in with a bum that doesn't have a job.
Maybe she's just coming to...
Or hooked up with.
Maybe she's just coming to visit Phil. And the sequel is that Phil needs... It'd be curious to know, like, if there's any resolution of this relationship in the sequel.
I see, and I don't know if she's in the sequel. Yeah, I don't remember. Shit, maybe I should have watched the sequel. I just know that would have messed me up, because it always does.
I could imagine, like, in Phil's situation, he, like, leaves New York And it was like, he just needs like a fresh start or something.
Yeah. It does seem like him. Let's see. So yeah, I'm just looking at Helen Slater right now. She's voiced a lot of things in a lot of Batman movies. Oh yeah, we saw her in The Secret of My Success. I forgot about that. She was the main girl in Secret of My Success. I can't even find City Slickers 1.
Ed isn't in City Slickers 2. That sucks.
Oh, I forgot about that too. Jeez. She was in an episode of Seinfeld.
John Lovitz is in City Slickers 2.
Oh, right. But I don't think he's playing Ed, though.
No, he's Mitch's brother, Glenn.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah. All right, and there we go. He's found his smile, the end. And that is City Slickers. Oh, boy. Now, Colin, on IMDb, it scored 6.8 out of 10, has a Metascore of 70. On Rotten Tomatoes, 89% on the tomato meter. That's critic rating of 89%, but the audience rating is only 64%. Kind of blows my mind. It's a critic's darling, I guess. Both critic scores higher than the audience scores. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like shooting a distressed cow in the head. Hit us with some reviews.
Right. This first reviewer is 5 out of 5 stars. I always say that even the worst movie is good if it has Billy Crystal in it. And although Crystal helps make this film what it is, along with this great supporting cast, it's really a nice story. It's about a man's second coming of age, and it's about camaraderie and second chances. The comedy is slightly irreverent and jarring, as it is partially a satire. It juxtaposes tragedy with humor, but that goes along with the film's theme of "that's life." And although the intermittent jokes may disrupt and off-put the film's tone at times, the build-up to the third act is well worth the wait. Even if the humor is not for you, the story is undeniably charming. If I ever get to the point in my life where I'm facing a midlife crisis, I will be sure to queue up City Slickers. For a comedy, the writing in this movie is superb. There aren't any silly plot holes or goofs that stand out. This film just doesn't do anything to annoy you, with circumstances that are easily related to and fun in-jokes you feel like you're on the journey with them. And as someone who hasn't yet gotten to their midlife crisis, this movie makes me realize that it won't be so bad.
So I guess that guy thinks that 2 days of training is enough, because that seems like a plot point that really sticks out. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest hole I think we found was, did they have enough training? Were they qualified to go on this trail ride?
Yeah. This next one is 2.5 out of 5 stars. City Slickers is a movie I've heard people bring up, but I'd never seen even parts of it. It was never a movie I felt I needed to watch, but I wanted to put something on that I wouldn't get too into. The first half of the movie is very slow. It's filled with jokes that make you groan. There are a few times I almost gave up and shit the movie off. I think he meant to say shut. The back half of the movie picks up a bit, and the triumph of characters not giving up and finding themselves salvage this movie some for me. I still wouldn't tell anyone to go out of their way to watch it, but I wouldn't discourage anyone from watching it either. It's right in the middle.
I'm not going to tell you not to watch it. Like, if you've already got it in your hand, you might as well put it in, but it's on you, buddy.
This last one is 4 out of 5 stars. I don't know if there's a better midlife crisis movie than City Slickers. And while I watched it a lot as a kid, this film hits a little differently as a middle-aged adult. It wrangles just the right mix of humor and sentimentality. This could have been a goofy, over-the-top comedy about three idiots in the middle of a cattle drive, but instead it has a heart that keeps its boots firmly on the ground. Crystal hits a home run in the lead role, and Jack Palance is menacingly warm as the ever-memorable cowboy Curly. It makes me smile to see that City Slickers still holds up after all these years.
Right on. Wow, City Slickers. That last review, I mean, I could just copy and paste that and say that is me. This movie hits differently now that I'm in my 40s. This, you know, all the stuff I remember from my childhood is not the stuff that I really latched on to this time. It is a very smart movie. It's very heartwarming, many layers. Yeah, that last review, that is me. It Yeah, I love this movie now that I'm in my 40s for different reasons than I loved it as a kid. But I think it still is a very solid movie, still holds up. The humor is great. The characters are fun. This one's a solid. I would 80% this movie. I thought this was a great movie. Colin, your first viewing, what do you think?
I loved it. I was blown away. I thought it was great. I feel like I've been deprived having not seen it. But at the same time, I also don't know that I would have. I think I appreciate this movie based on where I am in life. I don't know that I would have appreciated it or liked it as much, like if I'd watched it when it came out, or even like 10 years ago.
It helps when you have a kid. It helps when you have a wife. It helps when you're hitting that age. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, so that aside, I think it was just like I said, it's like in my 20s, I loved movies like I love coming of age movies. Like I love, or even when I was a teenager, like I love like Breakfast Club. Like I loved these movies about like becoming an adult and like figuring out life. And like, similarly, now watching this movie, I love this movie that like accurately and like smartly portrays middle age and like the struggles of middle age. And
it's the I did all that stuff as a kid. Now what? That's what we are with this movie, is the now what movie.
Yeah, and it's like we're not young, but we're but we're also not old. Mm-hmm. But we're too old for some things, and it's like, and you know, and it's just like, what is life about type stuff.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, hearing that Billy Crystal like used real life moments to like inform his character and like dialogue in this movie, I think that makes it all the better. And I wouldn't be shocked if like the whole like best day, worst day scene, that's one of the best scenes I've ever seen in a movie.
Well, I didn't even get a chance to shout out Bruno Kirby. We kind of ended up jumping over that for some reason. But like when Bruno Kirby tells that story about his abusive past and him standing up to his father and how that was his worst day and his best day, you know, like, you know, what was your best day? Same, or what was your worst day? Same day. And he rides off. Right. Like that was a moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even Phil's like talk about his wedding day, like best day of his life, and worst day every day, like every day since. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's funny, but like, you know, it's, I know people like that, you know, like I've seen people like that, and you know, that scene, that scene just like hits so well. It's a masterpiece, I think.
It was the perfect, it's funny because it's true moment for you.
Yeah. Like, it was just nuts. But it's still, I was shocked at how well it still plays today. And I think part of the reason it does is because it takes like the mental health of it all more serious than you would expect.
For a movie, 30-year-old movie?
A 30-year-old movie, or a movie filmed in that era too, especially concerning like men. And like then no one ever says like he's depressed, but it's like, it's a pretty accurate, I think, portrayal of like the depression that he's going through and the like angst and the lostness that he's going through.
Yeah. And 30 years ago to have three men saying, I love you to each other. Right. Like, I mean, that right there is also, it seems like it should be like this trailblazing moment, but it still took us like another 25 years to get back to that point. But it is nice to see in an early 90s movie.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think what I said at the beginning, like I was expecting like Happy Gilmore, like Sandler-esque, you know, like just over the top, you know, dick jokes and that type of stuff.
Modern day Almost Famous or Almost Heroes, I mean.
Yeah, and so I don't know, maybe going into it with that expectation, I was like just pleasantly surprised by how down to it is. This movie has like, when Harry Met Sally, I talked about how that's like, you know, that's like one of my top five favorite movies, and I think that this movie has almost everything that movie has just in a different, but just in like a different area of
the same charm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I loved it.
Right on. And there we go. That is City Slickers, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. If you like that show, well, you know, help us out. Go tell somebody about our show. Word of mouth is important for us, you know, it helps grow an audience. Or if you want to help us grow our audience even further, go over to whatever app you listen to your podcast on. Please give us some stars. Give us 5 stars. Help use those funky algorithms of iTunes to help drive us up some charts, help us get noticed. Or if you want to be a hero, baby. If you want to be our goddamn hero, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, and why don't you donate to your boys? You know, just help us with some of the expenses of the show. Help us help executive produce this bitch, because then you even get a shout out, just like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And be sure to check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne, at IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. And then write us at our email, IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com, and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Oh boy, Colin, Western month. At least we brought it home strong. Because, boy, oh boy, Western Month started out pretty shitty, but yeah. We brought it home with the Cowboy Way and now City Slickers. I mean, goddamn, we ended this thing right.
Yeah.
I mean, it was all uphill after Wagons East. You know, Young Guns, and then it just got better with Cowboy Way, and boy, oh boy.
It's been so long. I was trying to remember, like, what did we start with? And I was like, oh yeah, Wagons East. I think I just purged that from my memory.
Yeah. It's like, out of the 4 that we did this month, I can only remember 3. Yeah, we chose the right 3 to remember because, yeah, Wagons East. Whew, oh boy, go back to listen to that episode. But yes, we are heading into a new month. We're heading into a couple months that are going to, like, blend into each other, I've been realizing as we've been planning this out. But yeah, we're going to have, like, ourselves a big old classic action sci-fi summer. We're gonna crush it up here with a bunch of classic action and then a bunch of sci-fi for the next 2 months. But yeah, moving into classic action here. Next week, we haven't done enough of some of these old action stars on this show, so we need a Dolph Lundgren movie on this. And, I mean, you brought up the perfect point. What better Dolph Lundgren movie is there than fucking Masters of the Universe? It's right there in the title. He's the master of the universe, so...
Oh, boy. I mean, that's creative. I don't know that I would... I mean, trying to like name the best Dolph Lundgren movie. I mean, I think that's impossible. I don't know that, like, Rocky IV is probably the best Dolph Lundgren movie, but
yeah, he's got like Red Sonja is his. Like, that's the thing is Dolph Lundgren, I don't think ever took off quite the way that he should have. Which is why it's fun to start with him. I don't know whether Masters of the Universe was the reason for it. Now, have you ever had the joy of seeing Masters of the Universe?
Oh yes.
Oh, okay. I'm just making sure. Yeah. I was wondering whether this was going to be a first-time watch
no,
for you.
No. This okay. is like so. Yeah, my mom is like was a massive like He-Man fan, and she loved okay. like she loved like. I almost wanted to like try to see if I could get her to be in this episode because she like loves this movie and I love the cartoon and I remember watching this movie and being like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah,
like,
that's the reaction. That is the universal reaction. So, oh boy, can't wait to get into that. So until next week, I'm Sean Wells.
I'm Colin Stewart.
And we will see you for the power of Grayskull, Masters of the Universe. I have the power.
Have the power.
Next week on I Used to Like This One.
Good journey. Well, as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want us to spoil who Norman is for you...
Okay.
Spoil Norman. Ben,
I was thinking you would have something like a stampede of spoilers or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, that's good. You know what? Yeah. Like less bad trap.
Yeah.